All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is American Vindicta, episode 73. This will be airing March 3rd, 2022. I'm recording now, March 2nd. I feel the need to come before you, and let's just talk about some of the articles that are going on around the world. It is very dire that we start to dissect this. In the midst of potential World War III, there are a lot of unknowns, but there are some knowns, so let's talk about them. Currently, and this is an article from the Epoch Times, the United States delays missile test launch in an attempt to tone down Russia nuclear tensions. Now, this article goes on to say that the United States has postponed a test missile launch to try to demonstrate it has no intention of getting into a nuclear war, the military said March 2nd today. In an effort that we have no intention of engaging any actions that could be misunderstood or misconstrued, the Secretary of Defense has directed that our Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile test launch, scheduled for this week, to be postponed, a Pentagon spokesman John Kirby told reporters in Washington. The launch was going to be held by the Air Force. Military officials declined to say when or where it would have been held. There's no new date at this time for the launch. Kirby said the move was aimed at demonstrating that we are a responsible nuclear power, and that future test launch may or may not be canceled. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin remains confident that the current nuclear posture is adequate to defend the United States and allies, he added, explaining why America's nuclear deterrence levels weren't altered from DEFCON 3 to a DEFCON 2. Russian President Vladimir Putin over the weekend placed his country's nuclear deterrence forces on high alert, several days after his forces invaded Ukraine. Putin said the move stemmed from the aggressive statements that North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, were making with regards to Russia, in addition to the sanctions they've imposed, which he described as illegal. Ukrainian officials said the announcement was aimed at putting pressure on them to accept a peace deal with poor conditions, which they vowed not to do. The United States had not taken any concrete action before Wednesday in response to the announcement, though officials decried the move. President Joe Biden on Monday told reporters that Americans should not be worried about the prospect of a nuclear war. Kirby said there are no indications at present to suggest that Putin plans to launch nuclear weapons, and called for Moscow to dial down its posture in response to America postponing the test launch. Both the United States and Russia have long agreed that nuclear deployment could have devastating consequences. And we both agreed, most recently this year, that a nuclear war cannot be won and must not ever be fought. This is what Kirby said. Putin's provocative rhetoric and possible changes to nuclear posture, he added, is unacceptable. Kirby spoke after Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that a third world war will be a nuclear and destructive war. Now, to go along with that, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov warned Wednesday that a third world war would be, a, quote, nuclear and destructive amid his country's invasion of Ukraine. He said, the Third World War will be nuclear and destructive. President Biden is an experienced man and has previously stated that the only alternative to war are sanctions, Lavrov said in an interview with Al Jazeera's Arabic channel without elaborating, according to Gazeta, other Russian media, and Reuters. Lavrov also alleged that Russia would be in real danger if Ukraine ever acquired nuclear weapons. There is no evidence that Ukraine was attempting to acquire nuclear weapons from the West, and Ukraine gave up its nukes in the early 1990s following the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Earlier this week, the specter of nuclear war was raised when Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his country's strategic deterrence forces, which operate some of Russia's nuclear arsenal, to be on a heightened state of alert. Some analysts remarked that the order was meant to intimidate the United States and NATO so as they don't get involved in the Ukrainian conflict. Russia, like the United States, poses thousands of nuclear weapons. But both countries over the years have stressed that nuclear war would lead to the annihilation of both sides. That's mutually assured destruction. Earlier this week, Biden was asked whether Americans would be worried about nuclear war, and he responded no. We're assessing President Putin's directive, and at this time, we see no reason to change our own alert levels, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters on Monday, adding that the United States will not attempt to escalate the rhetoric after Putin's comments and order. Quote, we think provocative rhetoric like this regarding nuclear weapons is dangerous, adds to the risk of miscalculation, should be avoided, and we will not indulge in it. You know what's funny is when the Democrats, who have said that they will annihilate Russia, destroy them, that you know they attack Putin's personal character, which he's a very prideful man, so that's a dangerous thing to do to a dictator. You know, they come after him with sanctions. They're trying to starve out the country. But yet at the same time, they'll fund disinformation campaigns and they'll put, you know, phony politicians in power in Ukraine. And they'll fund Ukraine with weapons that then can be used to attack Russian troops. And the whole time they're saying, oh, we're innocent. Obviously, the politicians are not innocent. There's an obvious move to make Vladimir Putin have only one or two choices: to capitulate to their needs or to start a war that he will lose. That's the choices that Vladimir Putin is being given. I'm not a Russian apologist, and I'm also not pro-Russia. I'm just telling you what I see. The United States Emergency Service told the Associated Press on Wednesday that at least 2,000 civilians have been killed thus far, although the number cannot be independently verified. And Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city with a population of about 1.5 million, came under heavy fire again Wednesday. At the same time, satellite photos from Maxar show a huge convoy about 40 miles long of Russian tanks and other heavy vehicles spanning miles outside of Kiev. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations nuclear watchdog, said Russia had told the agency that its military had taken control around Ukraine's largest nuclear power plant, but operations there were continuing normally. Yeah, well, thank God. One wrong move and a nuclear power plant goes up, like Chernobyl again. These are the dangerous times that we live in. Our politicians obviously cannot find a mutual ground to bring Russia to the diplomatic table. So we're in a nuclear standoff. And I don't care as much as they want to tell the press that we're not on a different level of DEFCON. We most certainly are paying attention. We most certainly are. Now, if Russia can temp down the tone of aggression, hopefully our U.S. diplomats will do the same thing. But this all goes after one thing. What is Putin after? Is Vladimir Putin after Ukraine just to hold the minerals, just to hold the infrastructure and the economy and the breadbasket? Or is Vladimir Putin after something that he can use to blackmail politicians who tell the world that he's evil while he's out on a conquest to prove to the world that they are evil. That's why he vehemently described the current politicians in Kiev, in Ukraine, as neo-Nazis, as druggies. I'm guessing that's a relatable attack to Hunter Biden. Who knows? Who knows where this will go right now? Currently, for the first time since its invasion of Ukraine, Russia has said that on March 2nd that it has lost nearly 500 military personnel. This is another article from the Epoch Times. Russian Defense Ministry spokesperson Major General Igor Konashenkov, say that name five times fast, said that 498 Russian soldiers have been killed and 1,597 wounded as part of what Moscow continued to call a special military operation. Ukrainian authorities estimate the Russian death toll are more than 10 times the number cited by Konashenkov. Quote, regretfully, and this is Konashenkov talking, regretfully, among our friends participating in the special military operation, there are losses. 498 Russian military servicemen died while carrying out their warrior's duty. Now, there are also about 4,000 mercenaries from the Wagner Group that was deployed from Ukraine, deployed from Africa to Ukraine early in January. And supposedly 400 of these elite Russian mercenaries are in a hunt and kill mission for Zelensky and his family. There were also announcements this week that Russia is deploying Chechens into Ukraine. The Chechens, according to Bob Griswold and others, and we fought against them in Iraq, are some of the hardest, most brutal military forces in the world. No pity, no remorse, will happily kill whatever they're paid to kill. So if they're in Ukraine, and the other mercenaries are in Ukraine, then who else, mind you, is supporting Russia? Well, let's get into that. But before we get into that, let's finish this article. Now, the spokesman that said the military is eliminating a real threat, which until recently emanated from Ukraine, added that despite the wishes of the Ukrainian people, the nation would have soon been used to stage NATO bases and nuclear weapons, which is always the big threat to Vladimir Putin. Ukraine would be a launching ground for NATO. That would put them right there next to Moscow. So, in a way, that is a threat to Moscow. Now, according to Konashenkov, 2,870 Ukrainians had been killed and roughly 3,700 wounded to date. Russian forces have captured 572 prisoners of war. Konashenkov described the Ukrainian death toll as being comprised of nationalist and military service members, suggesting that the total included civilians as well. In a near unanimous vote, the United Nations voted on February 2nd to demand that Russia withdraw its forces from Ukraine. Representatives from Belarus, Cuba, North Korea, and Syria voted against the resolution. China is remaining neutral. Which, if China is remaining neutral right now, that means they're on the side of Russia, period. The vote took place as a Russian armored convoy drew closer to Kiev, Ukraine's capital. Elsewhere, the Russian forces bombarded residential areas along the lines of advance, and they say they have captured the Ukrainian cities of Kherson and Melitopol. Russia and Ukraine are scheduled to meet for the second round of talks in Belarus on March 3rd. The Russian military, in the meantime, launched another round of aerial strikes on Kharkiv, Ukraine's second most populous city of 1.5 million. The strikes killed 21 people and wounded 112, according to Oleg Zenahubov, the head of the Kharkiv Regional Administration. Several Russian planes were shot down over Kharkiv, according to Oleksiy Aristovich, a top advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Kharkiv today is the Stalingrad of the 21st century, Aristovich said, invoking what is considered one of the most heroic moments in Russian history, the five-month defense of the city from the Nazis during World War II. That would be Operation Barbarossa. We've talked about that on this channel. Russian attacks, many with missiles, blew the roof off Kharkiv's five-story regional police building and set the top floor on fire, and also hit the intelligence headquarters and a university building, according to officials in videos and photos released by Ukraine's State Emergency Service. University building. If that is a college, I'm guessing, I wonder if that college that is ran by the government was one of the supposed U.S. sanctioned biolabs. That would be interesting to know. You listening, you beautiful people, the listeners of this channel, if you know of any information about that, send it into an email. You can go to theamericanvindictashow.com. You can see where you can email me. Send me what you know. So far, I'm getting a tremendous amount of traffic and information from the viewers of this show. I love every one of you. Thank you so much for what you're sending me. I do read it. I do my best to compile it. Even though there is a lot, I am reading them. And I am responding to you if you don't notice that or not. I think this is probably one of the... I'm going to go ahead and say this is probably one of the best podcasts that's on air that is friendly to the listeners. And I am putting out not a bunch of bogus BS. I'm putting out what I can get from the news. That's the best intelligence gathering that we can have right now as a civilian. And there's a lot to go through. There's a lot of crap to go through. A lot of disinformation and misinformation and political dissidents that are out there. They're pointing fingers in every direction. Currently, this is what we got. Now, I want to read to you this article from the Daily Mail. Who stands or with Putin? Now, there's a map that shows which nations, such as North Korea and Syria, have voiced support for Ukraine invasion, and those against, and those trying to avoid taking sides. You can go to this article on the Daily Mail and view it yourself. It's by Jack Newman. Now, Vladimir Putin's, and this is their words, Vladimir Putin's barbaric invasion of Ukraine has sparked horror and outrage around the world with leaders lining up to denounce the Russian despot. Let me tell you something. Not once has anyone from Moscow cackled and laughed as they said, "We came, we saw, he died," like Hillary Clinton. These words, barbaric, horror, outrage. This is what I was talking about in the last episode, episode 72. That they're trying to pull upon the heartstrings of America. There's a narrative being built here. Eventually, they're going to want you to conscript willfully before they draft you physically into the military to fight their war. Moving on, NATO, the EU, and their allies have been providing weapons and military hardware to Ukraine while imposing harsh sanctions on Russia intended to cripple the economy. And if you cripple the economy, you force Russia into cahoots with China, which they already are. They're diametrically opposed, but geopolitically, they're allies. China is not a good guy. I don't know how many effing times I have to say this. China's not our ally. Everyone who is in the U.S. that aligns themselves with China should be considered a spy for China. Every one of them. No American businessman, no American politician, no American military figure should be aligning themselves with a communist party. That is vehemently un-American and opposing to the United States Constitution. You spit upon the Constitution and every man and woman who have sacrificed their lives for this country by aligning yourself with China to enrich yourself. Shame on every one of you. So many other words I want to say, but I can't. God help me in my mouth. Anyways, many countries have refused to condemn the military action, which has already cost the lives of hundreds of civilians, deciding to preserve their own historic and trade links with the world's largest nation. They are trying to maintain a balancing act, fearing the consequence of upsetting Russia while not stirring up protests back home and losing Ukraine as an ally, and maybe facing sanctions of their own. China decided to abstain from voting on a UN Security Council resolution condemning the invasion and has since offered to broker peace between the warring nations. Some have gone as far as pledging support for Putin, claiming it is the West who provoked him and he has the right to stake a claim for Ukraine through the bloody war. Divisions will be made even more stark with a UN vote today on whether to vigorously deplore the invasion and demand the Kremlin withdraw its troops. Well, let me ask a question, UN. When Russia doesn't withdraw the troops, when Russia doesn't care about your damn diplomacy and doesn't care about your sanctions, what are you going to do about it? Now, I can't give you my honest opinion on that because I don't know what they will do. But if the world is saying Russia is so bad, you know, Russia bad man, like they did Trump bad man, orange man bad, then what is the world going to do about it? Are we going to sit back and watch Russia kill innocent Ukrainian civilians and attack innocent Ukrainian civilians? And are we going to allow the funding of Ukrainian terrorist organizations and criminals, which is happening, because not everything is accountable there? I mean, the city is under complete chaos. Ukraine was said by Hillary Clinton and all these other Democrats that they were the most corrupt government in the world. And now they're saying that Zelensky and the rest of their parliament and the rest of the Ukrainians are this historic good guy. And historically, that is inaccurate. And they know it. They know that it's inaccurate. But yet still, they try to convince you that what they are doing is a righteous thing. And it's not. If we have bioweapon labs in Ukraine, and we funded it, then admit it. Just admit it. And then we can all go, okay, there were bioweapon labs in Ukraine. Bad. Let's destroy them, get rid of it, we won't do it again. I will actually take that. At least that's some form of diplomacy. And maybe Russia will accept that. And maybe we can come onto some sort of an accord where, just like Antarctica, Ukraine will be a neutral nation. But that's not going to happen. Belarus. The neighboring countries of Belarus and Russia share more than just a land border. The former Soviet nations have important economic and political ties, with Russia accounting for 48% of Belarus's external trade. The two nations also share similarly minded strongmen at the helm, with Alexander Lukashenko enjoying the role of Putin's warmongering sidekick. Now that's this article, okay? Remember the words, all right? They can't just give me the facts. They have to give me all the fluff. All right. He owes him loyalty after Putin backed the then beleaguered Belarusian leader when protests nearly ousted him from power. Lukashenko has since allowed Russian forces to engage in war games on his territory in the lead up to the invasion and take part in joint military drills with amassing troops on the Ukrainian border. A U.S. official has now claimed Belarus will join Russia in the war just after a referendum on Sunday approved a new constitution, ditching the country's non-nuclear status. All right. So what does that mean? Is the eventuality of Russian nukes being installed into Belarus more than likely? The American official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to the Washington Post said that it is very clear the Belarus capital, Minsk, is now an extension of the Kremlin. Belarus's role in the invasion so far has already resulted in sanctions from Britain and the EU. Sanctions will hit some economic sectors, and in particular, timber, steel, and potash. I don't know what the hell potash is. The EU said in a statement. Now, then we got Syria, all right? Bashar al-Assad has praised Putin for his deadly invasion, while at the same time denouncing Western hysteria over the maneuver. The Syrian leader, who himself has been accused of war crimes for the use of chemical weapons, which Putin denied, and said events in Ukraine are a correction of history and restoration of balance which has lost in the world after the breakup of the Soviet Union. He added, Syria stands with the Russian Federation based on its conviction that its position is correct and because confronting NATO expansionism is a right for Russia. And maybe it is. Maybe Russia really does feel that as NATO continues to grow further and further closer to their Western territories, that they see the encroachment upon their way of life and that they have to stand for it. America is unique in our mindset, okay? If, let's say Canada agreed to become a part of Russia, and Canada started to accept Russian military, and as they are Chinese military, and then they started to install airfields in Canada, and then nuclear sites in Canada, and then Russian biolabs were put in Canada, and Russian officials were then put in power where Canadian officials were originally, like, let's say, a prime minister. America would probably have a military problem with that. Because then you would put the Russian Federation right on our border. That means we don't have a buffer zone anymore for an invasion. Well, Russia does not have a buffer zone from NATO once Ukraine becomes a part of NATO or the UN. It is a military problem for them. Understand that. This is not my political view. This is the political view. Russia wants to keep the Federation the size it is. Vladimir Putin wants to regain territory that was lost during the Soviet Union. He has always said this. It's always been a goal of his. He has tried to do it through a hard form of diplomacy. But once again, you know, America is not Russia. We cannot look through the lens of our American eyes into Russian politics and say that's wrong, it's inhumane, it's illegal, because in Russia, that is how it has always been. Russia has always been controlled by the strong man. That is the way the mafia works, that's the way the oligarchs work. That's the reason why Putin has remained in power since the 90s. This is just the way of the world via Russia. We think Russia should be more like America. But are we willing to go to war for that? Are there atrocities happening throughout Russia? Well, I mean, the ruble's destroyed since the Soviet Union, so the atrocities come from that. When people become desperate because they can't afford anything, there will be a vacuum of power, and that vacuum will be filled within that void by mafia, by criminals, by terrorists, by oligarchs, by rich, powerful men, who will then abuse the people in the system to enrich themselves. That is the way of the world. Now, there are other players on this field. Venezuela. According to the Kremlin, Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro, offered strong support to Putin on Tuesday. The authoritarian pair discussed an increasing strategic partnership in a phone call after Maduro denounced the, quote, perverse plans that seek to surround Russia militarily and strategically. And last week, Venezuela's foreign ministry blamed the U.S. for the violence perpetrated by Russia. They said in a statement that the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela expresses its worry over the worsening of the crisis in Ukraine and laments the mockery and violation of the Minsk Accords on the part of NATO, encouraged by the United States of America. Quoting, the derailment of these accords has violated international law and created strong threats against the Russian Federation, its territorial integrity, and its sovereignty, as well as impeded good relations between neighboring countries. Venezuela is Russia's most important trading ally in Latin America as an anti-U.S. left-wing state, and it absolutely is. Venezuela is also a launching platform for Russian, I think it's the Tu-2 nuclear bombers, the Bears. That's a big deal for America. We cannot allow that if you look at this through the lens of a military man. Anywhere within our hemisphere that we allow an enemy to put nuclear weapons is not acceptable. But yet, they did it, and we did nothing about it. And that was under Trump's administration. It was Vice President, his vice president at that time, that was in charge of that whole fiasco that happened in Ukraine, Mike Pence. And still Maduro is in power. Now, we did nothing about that. And now this madman has aligned his military with Russia and said that Russia is allowed within this hemisphere to do whatever they want. We're just going to have to take a bite out of that sandwich, or we're going to have to face it militarily. But what do you think will happen? During the Soviet Union, relations were established during the two countries, and these continued under Hugo Chavez, who bought billions of pounds worth of arms from Russia. During the current presidential crisis in Venezuela, Putin pledged his support to Maduro and recognized his election wins, which others have deemed very fraudulent, and I think they were very fraudulent. Now, the two nations have carried out joint military exercises and share an opposition to the West, worsened by sanctions imposed against Maduro's perceived illegitimate government. If you want to see some real atrocities, look back during that time whenever there was that revolution happening in Venezuela recently after the whole presidential election fiasco. Oil pipelines were exploding, oil refineries were exploding, people were dumpster diving, eating, you know, a week old trash because there was no food. The police were literally running over protesters and shooting into crowds. It was absolute madness. We did nothing about it. We didn't invade. We didn't come and bring freedom and democracy to the people of Venezuela. If anything, when the Venezuelans came into America illegally as we were catching them, they were saying that, hey, we're here because look what's happening in Venezuela. And I would like to know just how many of those Venezuelans were sent back. If they were actually here for a legitimate reason trying to flee that horrific country. But we did nothing about it. But we're going to do something about Ukraine. We did absolutely nothing about Venezuela, an entity within our own hemisphere. But we did nothing about Ukraine. But we'll go to Ukraine. You know, we'll do everything against Russia there, in a territory that used to be the Soviet Union. It's just, it's amazing how geopolitics works. Some of the best oil resources in the world are in Venezuela. Topsoil oil. And we won't go after it? I find that strange. oil and these other natural resources have always been what has fueled the American war machine and our need to go into other countries, but why didn't we go there? That's a very strange question to me. Now we have Cuba. Like Venezuela, Cuba has pledged allegiance to the Russians and placed the blame with the United States and with the West. The nation criticized the U.S. for imposing the progressive expansion of NATO towards the borders of the Russian Federation while calling for a diplomatic solution. Isn't that funny? Cuba is calling for a diplomatic solution, and every single day, Cubans will flee on dinghy boats and plastic floating devices across the Gulf just to hit Mexico or American shores into Florida, hoping that we'll take them. People are starving, literally starving. There was a guy who's a Marine, he's a former Marine now, and he was talking about when he grew up in Cuba, because he came over here as a refugee, that they were having to take apart the furniture in their house in order to use it for wood to cook their meals. In an island state, they were not allowed to go out to sea and catch lobster or fish because it belonged to the state. Their people are starving, riddled with gangs and gang violence and mafia and drugs. And these people, these same deplorable autocracies, are saying that the United States are the bad guy. I find that entertaining. In a statement, the foreign ministry said the U.S. government has been threatening Russia for weeks and manipulating the international community about the dangers of an imminent massive invasion of Ukraine. Well, it did happen, didn't it? Now, it has supplied weapons and military technology, deployed troops to several countries in the region, applied unilateral and unjust sanctions, and threatened other reprisals. That's from a Cuban official. Cuba and Russia have had close relations since the Soviet Union, when ballistic missiles were placed there by Nikita Khrushchev, sparking the Cuban Missile Crisis. Haha, funny you say that. The Cuban Missile Crisis. You want to see a false flag? Once again, look up Operation Northwoods. We read it on this show, but you need to read that yourself just to see the level of false flags the United States will go through in order to get into another country. Just saying. After the 1959 Cuban Revolution, led by Fidel Castro, the father of the Prime Minister of Canada, the new Marxist-Leninist administration sought a close alliance with the Soviets. The resulting sanctions and embargoes from the U.S. moved Cuba further into the Soviet sphere, and the countries have maintained their strong relations following the collapse of the superpower. Cuba also recognized Crimea as part of Russia during the 2014 annexation. Now we have the nation of Myanmar. Myanmar's military government has expressed support for Putin and his territorial ambitions in Ukraine. General Zaw Min Tun, a spokesperson for the junta's council, said number one is that Russia has worked to consolidate its sovereignty. I think it is the right thing to do. Number two, it is to show the world that Russia is a world power. The government in exile has backed Ukraine, saying in a Twitter statement it condemned Russia's actions. How funny that Myanmar, the tyrant government of Myanmar, is allowed to be on Twitter and Donald Trump isn't. And conservatives, for the most part, are not allowed to speak truthfully or openly on Twitter. But Twitter will allow Vladimir Putin to speak, China to speak. They'll allow Myanmar and Cuba. Give me a break, people. Anyways, The support from the junta comes as a result of Russia and China's military backing. A UN human rights expert said last week the two powers are providing Myanmar's military junta with fighter jets that are being used to slaughter civilians. Well, has anyone heard about that? Huh. The report said Russia has supplied drones, two types of fighter jets, and two kinds of armored vehicles, one with air defense systems. Russia has been the general's closest international allies amid efforts by the West to isolate them. All right, everybody's favorite. Who's next on the list? Well, North Korea. North Korea broke its silence on Russia's invasion of Ukraine on Monday, blaming the hegemonic policy and high-handedness of the U.S. and the West. In its first official statement on Russia's attack, the foreign ministry said the West was guilty of abuse of power. Quote, "The root cause of the Ukraine crisis totally lies in the hegemonic policy of the United States and the West, which hence force themselves in high-handedness and abuse of power against other countries," the North Korean official KCNA news agency said, citing an unnamed foreign ministry spokesperson. North Korea accused Washington and its allies of ignoring Russia's reasonable and legitimate demands for guaranteeing legally backed security assurances. They systematically undercut the European security environment by pursuing the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's expansion towards the east, includingly, blatantly, deploying attack weapon systems. That's from the KCNA. The reality proves once again that as long as the United States' unilateral and double-dealing policy that threatens a sovereign country's peace and safety exists, there will be no peace in the world. Man, when I start hearing people talk about there being no peace and wars and rumors of wars, all that makes me think is that soon someone will call for world peace and will be listened to. Moving on, the Soviet area allies who share an 11-mile-long border are both motivated by anti-West and anti-NATO sentiments and have nuclear capabilities. Now, this is the neutral or so-called allies sitting on the fence. China. China's support of Russia was viewed as a bellwether on whether the invasion would spark similar actions worldwide, with President Xi known to have designs on Taiwan. And we're still waiting for that. I'm still waiting for China to take Taiwan because, you know, well, I can't say that word on radio. Biden is such a wuss, that's a word I can say, that he would probably just sit back and allow his puppet masters to take Taiwan. Even though we have an actual treaty with them to defend them from China, we're probably not going to honor that treaty. Not with this government. The Communist Party has tried to avoid voicing too much support to either Russia or Ukraine in a bid to stay neutral. Last week, China was one of only a handful of countries who decided to abstain from voting on a UN Security Council resolution condemning Russia's illegal invasion. China has so far refused to call Russia's action in Ukraine an invasion or criticize the Kremlin despite intensifying assaults from Putin's military. Beijing has also thrown Moscow another sanction-busting lifeline by lifting wheat import restrictions in an economic boost to Moscow despite sweeping sanctions imposed by the West in a bid to stop the war. Imports had been restricted in recent months over concern of Russia's measure to prevent plant diseases, particularly in agricultural crops. The move to keep the market open was reportedly part of a deal between Moscow and Beijing concluded earlier this month and is the latest sign of growing ties between two states. Absolutely. We're going to continue to push Russia into China's pocket. And China is going to allow the assimilation of Russia into their economy. And then sanctions won't matter anymore. But it was also reported over the weekend that several Chinese public banks are limiting financing to purchase raw materials from Russia for fear of Western sanctions. Sanctions should be seen to be supporting the Kremlin. Either that's wrote wrong or I don't know how to read. Continuing, about 30% of oil and gas produced in Russia is now sold to China. Putin is relying on his ties to China's Xi Jinping to bail him out of the increasingly tough sanctions being put on Moscow by Western nations as the invasion escalates. Well, yeah, absolutely. This is what's funny, though, is even though Xi Jinping is bailing out Moscow, we're still buying oil from Russia. Europe is still buying oil from Russia. So even though all these devastating sanctions and all this other crap is happening, why are we still funding Russia then? If they're so bad. I feel like we're being lied to. That's just me. In China's latest statement, Foreign Minister Wang Yi said Beijing deeply regrets that conflict has broken out between Ukraine and Russia and is paying extreme attention to the harm suffered by civilians. Yeah, give me a freaking break. China, you don't care about people. You willfully kill babies that are female. You tell people that they can only have the one child policy. And if it's a little girl, throw it in the dumpster. Oh, no, you know what? Better yet, dismember it and we'll feed it to the elite. Don't believe me? Well, that is kind of what the American abortion societies got caught with. All the aborted children, murdered children in the womb that were uncovered by Project Veritas. Kudos to you guys. All that was being sent to China. I don't want to go into some of that stuff, but I'll just say this. These people who say that they are paying attention to harm that's coming by civilians have an entree called baby head soup. Google that if you want. Go down that horrific route if you want. I strongly suggest you don't. But hey, that's there. China says that they should find a way to resolve the issue through negotiations. Well, there's no negotiations going on here. They're not going to happen. Now we have India. Narendra Modi, Mr. Modi. Their government has also been trying to perform a balancing act and abstained in the UN resolution. India has not explicitly condemned Russia's actions or called them an invasion, nor voiced support for Putin. The Russian embassy in India welcomed the stance, saying, "Highly appreciate India's independent and balanced position in the voting in the United Nations Security Council." Don't forget, Modi is the same guy who threw the roses on the ground for Trump when he came to India. India is the same country that was chanting Trump at one of the soccer games and waving American flags. Like, this is a country that wants America, but it's bordered by Russia and China and does business with Russia and China. They're part of the BRICS Nations Alliance. So that's a very confusing thing there. In the spirit of the special and privileged strategic partnership, Russia is committed to maintain close dialogue with India on the situation around Ukraine. Russia continues to be India's biggest arms supplier, and the two vast nations were close during the Soviet era. Following the dissolution, the pair continued to enjoy a special and privileged strategic partnership. Modi has spoken with Ukraine, but only to express concern over the violence as he attempts to avoid getting drawn into an international row. Now we have Pakistan. Yesterday, Pakistan became the first major nation to back Putin as it signed the first new trade deal with Russia since the invasion. Prime Minister and former cricketer Imran Khan said his country will import about 2 million tons of wheat and supplies of natural gas after meeting the Russian president last Thursday, the day he sent troops into its sovereign neighbor, Ukraine. Despite Russia facing international isolation and a raft of sanctions crippling its economy, Khan of Pakistan has defended potentially pumping billions into the Kremlin's coffers, saying Pakistan's economic interest required it. He said of the two-day trip that we went there because we have to import 2 million tons of wheat from Russia. Secondly, we have signed agreements with them to import natural gas because Pakistan's own gas reserves are depleting. Pakistan has expressed concern about the invasion but stopped short of condemning it. The move has led to top diplomats from 22 countries jointly calling on the government to support a new resolution today in the latest barometer of global support for Putin. The resolution is non-binding, but if it passes, will serve as a powerful rebuke for Russia on the world stage and a marker of its isolation. Serbia is also on this list. Brazil is also on this list. Now, it's just interesting to me, all the different nations that are out there, like Central Asia as well, the nations of Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Armenia, Kyrgyzstan, they've all tried to remain out of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, but they're all allies of Russia, every single one of them, to include Bolsonaro of Brazil, Mali, Central Africa's Republic, they're all a part of it. They claim to be neutral, but they're all allies. The presence of the Wagner group of mercenaries in Africa has led to pro-Russian sentiment in Mali and Central African Republic. So once again, they're all in cahoots with each other. South Africa. South Africa's Department of International Relations and Cooperation last week called on Russia to withdraw its troops and respects Ukraine's sovereignty and integrity. But the president of South Africa has now effectively rescinded the statement, wanting to take a more neutral stance. This is the part where America starts to lose power. All right? We have nations that should be aligned with the United States, but they're aligning with Russia. They may be little small nations, but when they combine everything together, they make for one hell of a big enemy, and they're spread throughout the world. All elements for World War III. All elements for a future Red Dawn. Eventually, if we have the wrong people in power, if we keep these leftists, crazy ass demonic people in power, the rest of the world is going to say, enough with America, we have to take them on. It's going to happen. What I would like to know is, will our other allies, our Western allies, still defend us? Will Australia, who's gone completely tyrannical? I don't think so. Will New Zealand, who went the same route? I don't think so. Europe is all over the map. But Europe gets all of its oil from Russia. So, I don't think so. Maybe Great Britain will. Maybe. Canada? Well, I don't think the Canadian citizens are on the side with Russia. But your politicians and your prime minister, bought and paid for by China. And if they're aligned with China, then they're aligned with Russia, and you might as well be an enemy state. Mexico? That's a laugh. Bought and paid for by Russia and China. We are effectively surrounded. Eventually, the invasion will happen. But not while the power's on. And not while we're still the major world superpower. When the petrol dollar gets devalued and the Chinese yuan becomes the main currency of the world, America will be invaded. That's the breaking point. I don't even think we did any sponsors for this show. So, real quick, My Patriot Supply, thank you very much for helping me out with this show. You can go to theamericanvindictashow.com. You can get the food sources from My Patriot Supply. Everything that you buy, I get a 10% commission. So that does help this show. We have Steve Quayle, Renaissance Precious Metals. If you need gold and silver, call Steve. Bob Griswold, if you need body armor, if you need ballistic helmets, if you need night vision, if you need to learn how to better prep and survive, give Bob Griswold a call. He's a frequent guest on this show, a wealth of knowledge. Give him a call. Then you have mountain-state-survival.com. Give Jeff a call. He can help sort you out when it comes to the basic needs of preparing. Trust me, we are all in the path of destruction for warmongers. Every single one of us. No one will be safe when World War III gets launched. There's no safe zone. There's no places to hide. People will turn on each other. Now's the time to prepare. Don't forget your Bibles. Don't forget to say a prayer. Get out there on the road. Get yourself in shape. Clean your guns off. Oil them. Make sure that they're ready to be used, because you just never know. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. I hate to be a madman on the radio, but that's just the world we live in right now. If you do want to email me, AmericanVindictaShow.com, you can email me. I will answer. We need to stick together right now as Americans. Do not be deceived by these people. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Stay safe. My name's Doug Thornton. You've been listening to American Vindicta. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.